popularly as Bud Ransom, a clocker at Churchill Downs. Why don't we start with a little of your personal history, Bud? When and where were you born?
I was born in Louisville, Kentucky, May 16th, 1931, which was Derby Day, the day that Tony Grant won the Derby.
Oh, that's really something. What was the full name you were given when you were born?
Kenneth Eugene Ransom.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I have two sisters. One was Ellen Louise Ransom, and one was Jimmy Lee Ransom.
Are they still living?
Jimmy Lee is living.
Do they live here in Louisville?
Yes, they do.
Were any of your family members involved in horse racing?
No.
Are you the first and only one that's ever been involved in horse racing?
Yes.
You have a nickname, Bud. How did you get that nickname?
Well, that nickname was given to me when I was a little kid. But the nickname that is now is Kenny. I mean, I got that on the racetrack. That's my nickname on the racetrack.
So people on the racetrack know you as Kenny.
Kenny, yeah, but my
very few people around, except your friends like us
Bud,
in South Louisville,
right.
We call you Bud.
Bud, right.
But your nickname, Bud, is for friends, and
right.
On the racetrack around those people over there,
yes.
It's Kenny.
It's Kenny.
Can you tell me if you've ever been married or not?
Yes, I'm married. I'm married to Ozell Griffith Ransom. And we have four kids, two boys, two girls, Kenneth Jr., Diane, Karen, and David.
Are your children grown?
Yes, they are.
They're all grown now.
Yes, they are.
What about your grandparents and parents? Your parents? Who were your parents?
My parents were James C. and Gola W. And my grandparents, I don't know because they had died when I, before I was born.
Are your parents living?
No, they're dead.
Both dead.
Both dead.
Where were they from?
My father was from Bardstown, Kentucky, and my mother was from Irvington, Kentucky.
And neither one of them was had anything to do with racing.
No.
What part of Louisville did you grow up in?
Portland.
In Portland.
Yes.
At the time you grew up in Portland, there weren't too many African Americans living there, right?
Well, there was, there were quite a few. I imagine, let's say, maybe 60, 70, if that's.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And you went to school then here in Louisville?
Yeah, I went to Charles Young, and then Madison Junior High School, and then Central High School.
You graduated from Central?
I did.
What year did you graduate from?
48 and a half.
48
and a half.
49
and a half.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit now about your memories of thoroughbred racing. Can you remember the first time you saw a thoroughbred?
Yes, I can.
And when was it?
It was like a Derby day. I imagine it was getting ready to go in the Army. I think it was about 49.
About 49.
Yeah.
And did you come to the racetrack, or
yeah,
you
I
just
came
happened
to the racetrack Derby day?
Just came there Derby day.
Right.
That's the first time you've ever seen one.
Yeah, the Dark Star won the Derby. I think was my first Derby.
Oh, that was 53.
Yeah. Okay.
That was 53. He beat Native Dancer ahead in that Derby. That was your first Derby there.
Yeah.
And then after that, you went in the service. You say?
No, I was coming out of the service.
Oh, you were coming out of the service.
I was coming out of the service.
And did you start working with horses then after that, or did you start working with horses?
No, I didn't start on the racetrack until 67.
So you were a grown man. Very much grown. So
right.
Had you held other jobs before that?
Yeah, I was in dry cleaning business for about 13 years, and then I worked at the powder company. Maybe a year.
That's the one over in Charlestown?
Charlestown, yes.
Okay. So how did you happen to come into working around the racetrack?
Well, it was strange. One day I was delivering cleaning, and they had a fire down at Miles Park. And somehow or another, I started rescuing horses, and from then on, managers got into my blood.
That right?
Yeah.
Were you... You weren't a fireman then. You just happened to be there at Miles Park, and there was a fire, and you went in there and rescued some horses.
Yeah.
And then you started really liking the horses.
Right,
then.
Started walking horses, and then...
Did you start walking horses at Miles?
Miles Park, yeah, I worked for Jimmy Gavin.
Is that right? What year was that then? 67?
67. Yeah.
And how long did you work for Jimmy Gavin?
I guess for about a year.
But you didn't travel with the horses then? You stayed right here, or did you travel?
No, I traveled with
them. Did you?
Yeah,
you went with them then? Where'd you go?
Well, I went to Arkansas, and I left, and I started working for Don Ford. I went to Arkansas with him, and then Florida. I went to, Old Tropical Park. And then from Tropical Park, we went to Arkansas.
So then your first job around the racetrack was hot walking, right?
Hot walkers, right.
Did you ever groom?
I groomed for a while, but it wasn't too good. I wasn't too good of a groomer.
Yeah. What's the difference between being a groom and a hot walker?
Well, a groom is more, it takes care of the horse, you know.
All right.
Bathes him and watches over him, you know, feeds him and you know, takes care of it.
So you don't automatically go from hot walker to groom. It takes some kind of knowledge about how to do that, right?
Right.
And you tried it, but you never were too good,
no,
too much good
I
at
was,
it.
I was never good.
Why? Is it because you weren't trained properly?
I try to do everything too perfect, you know. And I'd always get behind.
I see.
I'd always be the last one to get finished, and you know, the guys would always get on me, and so it just—I don't know—I just got tired of them getting on me, so I just quit.
So you were a hot walker, regular hot walker,
yeah.
For Gavin, and you went from Gavin to another stable then. Or you stayed with Gavin?
No, I went from Gavin to Don Ford.
Ford.
Yeah.
You stayed with Ford then?
Yeah, until I quit and got a job in the jock room as a porter.
Okay, so then you quit Ford and went in the jock room. Was that at Churchill Downs?
Churchill Downs, yes.
What year was that about?
I'd say that was about, I think,
67. 67.
So,
67,
68, you know.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah, yeah.
I see. And so you started working in the jock room around the late 60s. Then,
yeah, in the late 60s.
Yeah. And then... you didn't hot walk anymore. That was your job then.
I would hot walk in the mornings and then...
And go over there and work. So you have two jobs
right
there on the track
right,
then, right?
Right.
And at that time, were you married?
Yes, I was.
And then so you would use... That was your job then.
Right.
Take care of your family with
right
what you earned on around the racetrack
right
on both of those jobs.
Right. Right.
All right. Tell me about horse racing, some of the people that you work with, and some of the kinds of things that you've endured, or had to endure.
After I got the job as a porter at Churchill, then I found out it was the opening in Chicago. So I went to Chicago and started portering. And there I run into...
Which track at Chicago?
Arlington Park.
All right.
Yeah, and then I run into... a parker named Pete Peterson and William Barber, and I used to get there early in the morning and do my work and go up there and sit with them and learn how to time horses.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So these guys, were these men parkers in Chicago?
Yes, they were African Americans.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What year was that about?
That was in 68.
In 68?
Yeah.
So then you started looking at the horses, and you started getting interested in clocking the horses,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, clocking.
And what were their names again?
William Barber and Pete Peterson.
Both of whom were African-American clockers.
Yes.
Which was kind of a rare thing around a racetrack, isn't
right
it?
Right.
And they would sit up in the, and you go there early in the morning and watch them clock the horses.
Horses, yeah.
And so then you sort of fell in that also, then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well then again, and then I got interested in colors too, you know. I used to watch the color man, you know. I was always trying to advance to go a little, you know, step farther.
I see, so.
Yeah.
In other words, you by this time, you're still dealing on the backside, but you're aim was to move up the ladder on the front side.
Right.
Over there
right
with the timers and the clock.
That's what it was, you know.
All right. What about the African Americans in the horse industry? That is, in, say, training. Did you ever know any black trainers?
Oh, yeah, I know a few, you know.
Who are some of them?
Well, there's Mr. Elmer Clark in Chicago. There's Howard Amos here in Louisville. John Robinson in Louisville. Let me see, there was a Mayberry in Chicago. Man, let's see.
Do you remember any of the older trainers, like Perosia? And,
no. Yeah, I do remember
Tech Perosia.
Yeah, I do remember.
You remember Mr. Loudon or Raymond White or any of them?
No, I don't remember those, you know, because I think they were like, I think Teddy retired when I started.
I see.
And I think Mr. White was in Ohio.
All right, cool.
He was training in Ohio.
So the trainers that you know are the ones that are presently training now.
Yeah, and then I knew an old, I can't recall this old man's name, but he was a good trainer. Nate Cantrell.
Was he in Chicago?
Yes, he was in Chicago. He was an old time trainer.
So how long did you work? Did you just stay in Chicago then?
No, I would go there. I think the meeting would start like in April and end in January.
So you'd stay there?
I would stay
during there. During the time?
Yes, I stayed there for 19 years.
Would you take your family with you?
No, I just went there by myself.
So you worked mainly at Churchill Downs, the Kentucky, some of the Kentucky tracks, and right. Chicago, right?
Right, but then again, see, Kentucky, when I left Kentucky, they were only racing like, I think it was 20-some-odd days, or 15 or 16 days in the fall, I mean, in spring, and I think about 24 days in the fall.
You couldn't get the work in Kentucky?
No, I couldn't make it.
Yeah, so you had to get
the Chicago. I got on to Chicago and the Arkansas, sir.
Okay. Did you work ever work on horse farms?
No.
Never on the horse farm.
No.
So how did you get into clocking? Just describe how you went into clocking on a full-time basis.
Well, I started in Chicago. They opened this track called Old Lincoln Field, which was Balmoral. And they needed a clocker there, so Mr. Peterson recommended to Mr. Iverson, the racing form, that you know, that he thought I should have the job. So they gave me the job, and I ended up working at all the racetracks. You know, I started at Balmore and ended up working all every racetrack there was in Illinois.
Is that right?
Yes.
That would be Sportsman.
Sportsman, Hawthorne, and
Washington was going that time too.
Well, Washington went 1 year, you know, and then they went bust.
Right. And then was your job clocker then, full-time clocker?
Well, yeah, I would do the clocking in the morning and then I would do the silks in the afternoons. I always had two jobs there.
All right. Clocker in the morning and silks in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So it was colors and clocks, right?
Yeah.
So then you've been in clocking horses then since the 60s, late 60s, right?
Well, really, I would go there, but maybe like 72 is when I really...
So you've been there at least 20 years. At least 20
years,
yeah. What are some of the things that a clocker has to know in order to be a good clocker?
Well, the clocker has to know how to identify a horse. You see, this is where the colors and the, you know, the colors of the horses come in together, because, you know, a good color man got to know the colors. And a good clocker's got to know the horses, you know.
So you know the horses. How do you know the horses? Just
well,
by looking at them?
By identifying them, you know.
How do you identify them?
By looking at them. You know, each horse has a distinction, something that you can identify. You can identify the horse with. You know,
yeah.
Like,
so in other words, you look at a blaze face or.
Blaze.
Or something on a leg,
maybe
or three
ears,
yeah.
Maybe the bit he wears.
So each horse is different then.
Every horse is different.
And a clocker has got to know. In other words, you know, over here, by going over there in the morning, you probably would know almost all the horses that come out on that track, right?
Well, you don't know them all. You always, what you got foal papers, which you go and copy full papers that identify the horses. And okay. You have a book.
Okay.
You compile a book of every horse that's there, and then you see a horse and you go through your book, and that helps you to identify. But sometimes, you know, you see horses and you're able, you know, you get familiar with them, so you know them when you see them.
So when they come on the track to exercise in the morning, what you got? What kind of equipment do you have?
Well, we have binoculars and we have a stopwatch.
Binoculars and a stopwatch.
Yes.
So when you look, you'll be over. Will you be on the front side or the back side?
Back side. I'm back at side. 5-8-fold gap.
So when you look over there and you see all those horses that come out there in the morning, then do you pick a special? Do you time all of them that run exercise that morning?
We have 4 clockers there.
You have 4 clockers.
Yes.
Okay. Do they know, you know, when a horse is going to breeze or go handily or
yes, well, that's what you watch for. You know, you watch when a horse breezes, where he's breezing and where it's a handily breeze, you know.
How do you tell the difference between the handily and breezing?
Well, you know, when it's a handily breeze, it got him well in hand, you know.
All right.
He's sitting there on it.
All right.
And then when they breeze him, you know,
They loose the rein.
Yeah, they loosen, you know.
Then, but what about when they're going real fast with hand? That's handling.
That's when they're handling. No, that's when they just sitting there. You know?
When they're just sitting there.
Yeah,
not pushing him.
No. They just sit there, and every now and then they let out a notch, you know. And
so,
to him.
Yeah. So in other words, handily then would mean that he's going at his best, right?
Yeah. Well, he's going at his best, you know.
Breathing would be just a little bit less than that.
Well, yeah.
So if you see in a farm, a horse work 3/8 of a mile handily in 35,
yeah.
That means he was well in hand.
Right.
And if he breathed 35,
they
were letting him go a little bit, pushing him a little bit. So breezing then, if he goes 35 breezing, that's better than going 35 handily?
No, 35 handily is better than breezing.
Is that right?
Yeah.
See, now there are people who have the wrong notion about that.
Yeah.
They think breezing is that the horse is not being pushed as much as he's being pushed when he's going handily.
No.
It's just the other way around.
Yeah, you see, when he's in hand, you know, I mean, they got a hold of it. You know, then when they breathing him, they letting him go.
So in other words, you have to watch. How many horses do you watch, in the morning?
Maybe 200. You know.
200 horses.
You watch them. We breathe. You know, we breathe sometimes 100 and some odd horses a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so maybe your mind has to be going fast,
I'm
right? All the time. You have a pencil and paper there with you?
Pencil and paper, yeah.
With the names of the horses?
Well, we got what you call a tab writer. Yes, we got a book that we can keep the horses, you know.
So then, right there at that moment, you know, you're clocking, you'll get, say, there are 2 horses just going down the track same time. You know both of them, and you'll then record when they finish.
Right.
How do you know whether they're going 3/8 of a mile or whether they're going 7/8 of a mile.
You watch them.
Well, you got to watch them.
You got to watch them. Sometimes, you know, you watch them. Some go 5, some goes a half. You know, you got 4 guys and they all be looking at the track and say, horses.
Yeah, you'll be talking
right,
to each other.
Each other. Horses leaving 3/8 pole and so-and-so's got it. Some guy says, I'll take the half. Another guy says, I got the 5/8. Another guy says, I got the gate, you know.
I see.
Yeah.
So then you come up with your tabs on it. And are these accurate then? If you say a horse is worked a half mile and 49 breezing, that 49 is accurate, right?
Sure.
And then when they put that in the form, what do you do then when you get all this together? Do you report that right away to?
You report it to, you type it up and then you report it to the racing form. You send a copy to the racing form. You send another copy to this place in Lexington. Oh man, what do they call it? Well, anyhow, they send it to the ones that's in the program.
Sort of a clearinghouse, yeah, where they get all the works and all that, that kind of thing.
Right,
One in Lexington, and then the racing form, you can get racing form and get one too.
Yeah, but the one that I'm talking about is the one that you see on your program.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the one we send the works to Lexington, and they send those up.
And the ones on the program is about the same as the ones that you sent to the racing form?
Racing form, yeah.
And this is pretty accurate, though, isn't it? I mean,
it is accurate. Yes, yeah. It is accurate.
As accurate as you can get, then, right?
Right. That's right.
Very seldom you make an error. What is it that, is there some horses that you miss then?
I'm sure you miss. You're going to miss them.
Yeah.
I mean, because the horses is wave after wave after wave. Sometimes, man, it's just hard to keep up with them.
Yeah, and is that why sometimes you'll see on a racing form or even on the program a horse who's been off, but you don't see any works on them? Those are horses that may have worked that you didn't get?
Well, no, not necessarily. You see, you got horses at the Kentucky Horse Farm. You got horses at Turfway Park. You got horses in Lexington.
Right.
I mean, you got horses over here at Cook's Farm, you know, and they don't have no clockers there.
I see. So they may have worked on those farms, but there are no clockers around.
No.
But if they're working on one of the tracks where there's clockers, you're not going to miss them then.
No, very seldom you miss them.
All right.
You very seldom miss them.
And you're watching these horses over the years. Now, that has something to do with the eyes, right? You got to have visual acuity, right?
Right.
You
got to
be very, very keen on. I noticed that you wear glasses then.
Yes.
Do you wear your glasses when you are?
I sure do.
And binoculars and glasses?
And glasses, yeah.
So,
went for an eye test and had my glasses changed.
Is there any strain on the eye then?
Yes, it is.
It is? Is it?
Yes, it is.
Did you wear glasses when you first started clocking?
Yes, it is.
So you've had glasses a long time?
Yes. But the strain is like in the night, I mean in the morning time, you know, they work horses in the dark.
Yep.
It's kind of hard to see, but now they got lights up there and you can kind of see them, you know, but before they put them lights up.
So when they come out there in the dark, you got to find out, look and see this particular identifying factor to each one of the horses. That's kind of hard there.
That's what hurts the eyes.
What about the clockers? Do clockers have a kind of association or union or anything like that, an organization?
No.
It's just whoever is hired by who hires you?
Well, I work for Churchill Downs. And you have a Churchill Downs clocker, and then you have a racing farm.
I see.
Yeah.
But you work for Churchill Downs.
I work for Churchill Downs.
Is your job at Churchill Downs, is that a regular job?
It's a year-round.
Year-round job.
Yeah, I'm what they call the head clocker there now.
Oh, you're the head clocker?
Yeah.
That's great. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Just to be talking to an African American who is a head clocker,
right?
Which brings me to the question. You know, a lot of people think of African Americans in horse racing on the backside, and that's all grooms or hot walkers or whatever. But what has sustained you over the years in staying right there with this clocking? Has it been the job? Has it been your interest in horses or whatever?
Interesting job. It's very interesting. Job, and then you get to see good horses. It's like the Breeders' Cup, man. You get to see the king of the crop. Derby day, you get to see the cream of the crop. You know,
that's
it's
right.
It's there.
Yeah. Are you on a stand or something?
Yeah, we have a little
clocker stand.
Stand.
So you are up elevated. And you can see them really well. Then.
Right. Right.
Did you do any clocking during the Breeders' Cup this time?
Sure did. Like,
that's
crazy.
Is that that's great, isn't it?
It is.
The greatest horses in the world, right?
There's nothing like it.
Is that right?
Nothing like it. There's nothing like it. You just got the experience.
So that's the experience of it, just the thrill of
that's something
that motivates one to stay right there with clocking, right? You think that's going to be your job from now on?
I hope so. You never can tell. You
never can tell, but you hope you can stay around for a while.
I hope
then.
So. You know,
do you have any kind of pension plan or anything like that?
See, they give you a pension. They also let you share in revenue.
So you share in revenue then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind of a revenue sharing kind
plan,
of thing.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. So you know, it's a pretty good guy.
Well, tell me a little bit about African Americans in the racing business. Who would you say is the best African American jockey that you ever saw, or have you seen many?
Well, you know, Mr. McMillan, you don't see that many African American jockeys around. You know, the one that I really, you know, was James Long. You know, he was about the best
that you saw.
Yeah,
because he was in Chicago, right?
Yeah, because it wasn't that many there.
So he was in a class by himself because there weren't that many around.
Right. But then again, you know, they never got too much business.
Yeah. Who was the best African-American trainer that you've been around? You've been around Robertson, you've been around Amos.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Elmer Clark.
Clifford
Scott.
Yeah. I thought he was a great trainer.
And he did. Because he traveled the circuits from Chicago to New Orleans, right?
And back to Chicago.
Yes, I've heard his name several times mentioned.
I thought he was a good trainer.
What do you think is the reason that we don't have as many trainers and as many jockeys that we formerly had, say, years ago, way back? When the jockeys were riding in the Derby and all that. Why do you think that?
I don't know. It's really a mystery because I believe that a black trainer can train just as good as a Caucasian trainer. And I think a black African-American rider can ride just as well as a Caucasian rider. But there's that old stigma, you know. Could we say racism or whatever you want to say? But it's just plain secret.
That's it. You just don't see it. They've just been kind of locked out of the industry.
Yes, they have. You know.
What was it like for your family when you would go to Chicago, for example, stay 5 months or four months?
Well, it wasn't too good, you know, and I kind of proud of my wife. I think we've been married now almost 40-some-odd years. So.
That's wonderful. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman.
Yeah.
She just sort of held things together, right?
She did. She was the backbone.
So you had to, when you would leave, then you had these children,
four children, yeah.
And the wife would take care of the kids and all that.
Yeah.
Did you buy your home down on the
Walker? Home then. That was the reason why, you know, I had to go.
I see. So you had to get some money to keep that home going.
That home going, right.
That's right.
Yeah.
So then, but then you'd have to leave your family and say 3 or 4 months at a time. Would you live around the racetrack then when you'd go to Chicago?
No, I live in the city.
You live in the city?
Yeah, I live in the city.
And so you'd come drive in and from wherever you lived in the city into the racetrack every morning.
Right.
You never lived around the track there, on the track how do you compare Chicago, you know, your experience clocking in Chicago with the experience that you have here at Churchill Downs?
Well, you know, it's just similar. Chicago, you know, there, you got to report every horse that works. You know, when you bring a horse out there, you got to report to the clocker that you're going to work this horse. But here, you know, they don't necessarily have to do that.
I see. What is the best horse that you ever saw?
Dr. Fager.
Dr. Fager.
I loved him.
What was about him
that made him? Beautiful horse. Big. Oh, he was so pretty and
handsome.
He was a gorgeous.
Did you ever see him run?
I sure did.
Were you there the day he broke the mile record?
It was at Arlington Park.
Yeah.
I sure was.
You were there watching that.
I was there watching.
He still owns that record too, doesn't he? World record in the mile and 32 and 3 or something like that, right?
I think so.
Yeah, that was a buck pass that had the record, and Dr. Fager broke that record.
He was a horse, I'm telling you.
He was a front runner, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah. Something like Holy Bull.
Right.
Go to the front and stay there, right?
Right.
He could go a distance, too, right?
Yeah.
So you have to give, if you looked at all, you've seen all the ones that you've seen, of all the ones you've seen, you have to give it to Dr. Fager.
I love Dr. You know, you gotta think about Holy Bull too.
Yeah.
He's something too.
Oh yeah. No, he's something to watch, isn't he?
I'm telling you.
He runs. They both have similar styles of running, right?
They do.
Big, I mean huge.
Heart.
Fager was and a whole bunch of hearts, right?
Yeah, hearts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat horses like that.
That's right.
Yeah. Especially once they get to the front, and then they keep that speed and that stamina.
That's right.
And Fager was that kind of, Dr. Fager was that kind of horse then. What about the best fillies that you've seen run?
The best fillies was, I gotta think, was that thing that Hammerhead, what was her name?
Light Light.
Yeah.
You liked her, huh?
I loved her. She had heart too.
Is that right?
Yeah, she
heard. She won the Kentucky Oaks, didn't she?
Yeah, I think. Yeah. Did she win it? She could have. Now, I have to look. I think she did.
Yeah, I think she did.
She did. Yeah.
And then she had several races up in New York.
Yeah.
And finally, he raced against some colts.
Yeah.
And then she broke down. But she was an excellent filly, right?
She was something else.
Big.
Yes, she was. You know, she wasn't all of that.
Who trained her? Was that Lucas?
Yeah.
Lucas trained her. Yeah. She was a nice filly.
Yes, she was.
Yeah. As we wind down here, I wanted you to just to talk a little bit about the backside and your relationship with people on the backside, blacks who work on the backside.
Well, I think I have a quick relationship with them. African Americans that work on the backside, we all talk and laugh and talk and speak every morning. I speak to everybody every morning, you know. I think I have a good relationship.
Have you seen a different kind of person working on the backside over the years? African Americans, are they the same? Are there as many as they used to be?
No, they are. You're beginning to see more Mexicans, Latinos.
Right.
Yeah.
And girls, and women.
And girls,
right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You know, you used to see a lot of black exercise writers, but you don't see them anymore.
Are there any black, any around at all left?
What?
Black exercise writers.
Yeah, there's a few.
Yeah.
But
and the best, some of the best exercise writers that you've seen, I'm sure, have been blacks, right?
Oh, yeah.
Who are some of them?
Well, you had your friend here, Pootsie.
Good exercise.
Yeah, sure was. Yeah.
What about Pinkston? You ever watch him?
Well, you know, he was, I did watch Woodard. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, he was good, too.
Who were the good ones?
Bonifon,
right. Yeah. And what about Sam? Does he still exercise? Sam Alexander?
Yeah, he's good, but, you know, he's not as devoted as he should be to the game.
Does he still get up? You still see him exercising?
He comes, you know.
Who are some of them that are now over there who exercise
well,
boys? Regular.
Well, it's Sammy and, Al. You know, that's about it.
So who does the exercising now?
I mean, mostly girls and Caucasians and Mexicans.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So you the exercise boys, and you would know a lot. You know about watching the horses and watching them work out every morning and clocking them. You know whether it's an exercise boy or whether it's an African American or not. So what you're seeing is a disappearance of African American exercise boys. And exercise boys make a little bit more money than grooms, you know,
don't they? They sure do.
What does an exercise boy make on according to the trainer?
It's according to the stable that he works for. You know, a good exercise boy, I guess he makes like $400 a week.
Is that right?
Yeah, at the top notch stables now, you know, like the Suge McGahee's and all of them kind of people. I don't think they make it here, you know.
Do jockeys exercise sometimes too?
Yeah, they work horses, but they don't gallop horses. They work them.
In other words, if prepping a horse, like for the Breeders' Cup or something, they'll get the jockey that's going to ride him to come in and work him.
Right.
But he doesn't regularly hang around the barn. I see. Who's the best jockey that you've ever seen?
Oh man, there was several. You know, there was your cousin. I thought he was great, and Baeza, I thought he was great. You know, there's a lot of them. Hardtack,
great
makers, you know.
You can't separate them.
No, but they all was Caucasian.
Yeah, yeah. What about here at Churchill Down?
Now? Yeah. Well, you know who the master is.
Pat Day. He's the master, right?
He's the master.
What makes him stand out over all the most of the rest? Not his winning ways, but what makes him win?
Well, I think he has a feel for the horse. He has a feel for the race. He knows when to move, like they say, he knows when to hold and when to fold, you know.
So he's got that down.
Yes,
isn't
he? Has.
Yeah.
You know, you
and
see
so because he rides so well, then his agent is able to get good mounts for him then, right?
And they come running to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he's a guy that, you know he's beat, he just sits there on a horse, just sits there. And you say, well, when is he going to let him run, you know? And then here he comes.
Yeah. So he has a good seat.
Yes.
And he times, he knows exactly when to make the horse go, he knows how much horse he's got. Well, Bud, it's been really good talking to you, but I want you to wind up by telling me a little bit about what you think the future is for African Americans in horse racing. That is, at the owner level, at the trainer level, and even at the backside level.
Well, I think the future is good, but you know, you gotta be dedicated. You gotta get there in the mornings. You gotta get, you know, 7 days, and you just gotta be dedicated. It's good, but getting African Americans to be dedicated is not like it used to be.
I see.
You know.
What about the future for them in your occupation, like clocking?
It's good.
Do you see any? Do you see any on the horizon?
Nobody. I've asked. You know, it was a job open. I didn't even know who to ask. You know, I didn't know who would want it. You know, because you gotta know how to do fraction. you gotta know how to write spell.
Right.
So, I mean, who do you ask?
So,
nobody interested.
Yeah, so to get interested, they have to get interested like you got interested, right?
Right.
Start around, be around the jock room, be there with the colors.
To the stand.
That's
you
it.
You got to come there. You know, many mornings I was there, it was no pay, but it's all learned. And then eventually I got my shot.
So when you got your shot, you took it.
Sure.
That's right. Well, it's really been interesting talking to you, Bud. Do you have any final words you'd like to say about horse racing and all of it, and the job that you have, and whether you like it, you know?
Well, Doc, I like my job. I really like it, and I like the racetrack. I like horse racing. I think it's very interesting.
That.
You know, it's something there for anybody that, you know, would want to try it. You know, an owner, a trainer, a rider, you know. It's there. The opportunities are there. But you got to be dedicated.
And for African Americans, the opportunity is there too.
It is.
It's better now than it has been in the past.
Well,
it's a little bit more open,
you
right?
You know, I really can't say it's better because I don't see.
Just don't see them.
I don't see them. So I can't say whether it's better or worse.
Would it be, is it feasible if I were to take some youngsters and just bring them around and train them in the equine business, you know, that is a school for them.
Sure.
You know, to have some kind of a school where I could bring African-American youngsters from, say, the projects, and bring them into some kind of class and train them from the ground up. Is that a feasible idea?
Did Mr. Peroci do that?
Yes. Oh, well, he did that, you know, it wasn't organized, but he did that with us.
Sure.
You know, that's how we learned the trade.
Y'all went to the race.
That's right. That's
but
right.
You don't see young kids go to the racetrack now.
Yeah.
Not like y'all did.
That's right.
You know, and then you don't have nobody, you don't have no role models back there. You
that's
don't
right.
have no black trainers.
That's
back
right.
There,
that's
know?
Right. So,
yes, that would be a great
that's
idea.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Sure it is.
Somebody else broke that idea. That's not my
sure.
idea. Mr.
But
Elmer Clark did.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, thank you very much then, Bud, for your time. And I'm very happy that you could pick up the time to give me this interview. And we're going to treasure this tape because it is an unusual one in that there aren't that many, if any, black clockers around the racetrack here in Kentucky. I don't. You're probably the only one in Kentucky, right?
I am.
You're the only one.
I am.
Well, thank you very much.
And it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah.